Fantasy Freaks and Geeks, what's up? You're listening to the NFL Fantasy Life Podcast. James Coe here with you, joined alongside by the magical beard of fantasy himself, Matt Franciscovich. What's up?
Hey, man. What's going on?
I'm pumped up, man.
Had a good weekend? Did you have a good weekend?
I had an awesome weekend.
All right.
I had an awesome weekend. I went to Palm Springs. We're celebrating my...
Nice.
Yeah, man. It was cool. Stayed over at the Ritz-Carlton. Got a great deal there. My wife and I were celebrating our... Oh, my goodness. What are we at now? Our eight-year wedding anniversary.
Congrats,
wow.
Man.
It sounds That's like a big. Long time.
Yeah.
I feel... Whenever I say that, I'm like, man...
Yeah.
Bro, I've been here the whole time.
There's like a couple things, right? So you're like, oh my God, I've been out of school for 15 years? Out of college for 15? That sounds like a long time. And then when you say, I've been married for 8 years, that sounds like a long time too. So what? No, I was in Palm Springs. What's up, right?
Oh, hey, I just have to wait to be addressed.
You don't have to wait to be addressed.
Congratulations.
And you never wait to be addressed.
I do. I typically do unless it's super egregious. But this is egregious in a good way.
Okay.
Because I wanted to say congratulations.
Oh, thanks.
That's great.
I appreciate it.
And baby Co is three?
She's three.
She's three.
Yeah. We left her over with the in-laws.
That's awesome.
So it was good. Adam Rank, how you doing, pal?
Pretty bad.
Pretty bad?
This was one of the worst weekends of my life.
Okay. Wow.
How much of this involved Buddy Norse?
All of it.
Like
my 2-year-old had a birthday party. Who was and sorry because only James was invited, so I apologize for the because
right.
You only invite people with kids. Like
true.
You want to invite somebody with a tot. Like if you don't have a baby, like I always feel like I would like because then somebody's on the hook for a gift.
Yeah.
But you're not going to get reciprocated. At least not for a while.
Right.
So all the single guys are always like, okay, you guys, you just move to the list. But anyways, it went off without a hitch. It was amazing. It was
right.
Really, like, for kids' birthday parties, and listen, I'll put this on Front Street. If it sucks, I will call it out. I don't care whose it is. This one was literally, not figuratively, amazing. Really was great.
Oh,
and so that was good. The Angels won, so they had taken the series against Toronto.
Okay.
And Sunday
so you're riding high.
Seemed like a great day. And yeah. As the giver that I am, I said, fine, I'll go to church on this is the problem. Is I said I'll go to church on Sunday.
Okay.
I'm following the game on my phone, you know, but I turn it off because I'm not gonna silence it because I don't want to have the accidental like, oh, the ringtones up. I completely turn it off.
Okay.
And then go to lunch. Mm-hmm. Angels were up 10 to whatever.
Perfect.
And then I get a text when we're at lunch, and my friend's like, how did we lose that game? And I'm like, you better be joking. This is the worst joke if it is. And they lost. And what's amazing is that this was the second time in a week Buddy Norris had given up a walk-off grand slam,
oh.
Which I feel is difficult to do.
That stings.
Like, that doesn't happen all the time. And then James has to text me like, hey, our fantasy team. And I'm like, expletive deleted. Our fantasy team. I don't care. I'm a human being. I am.
But
it's like texting somebody like,
hey,
our favorite bartender passed away. You're like, yeah, that was my brother. Like, stop it. Like, it's like that kind of. That might have been too
dark.
I don't. By the way, I don't have, and nor have I ever had a brother that was completely fictitious.
Can I just ask, what in the hell is happening to start this podcast right now?
What a start.
We're talking fantasy.
We are not. MG Mike out, Marcus Grant. What's up?
Man, it's humid.
It is a little bit.
Like, the humidity has come back.
Yeah.
Like,
a little overcast.
You know,
terrible.
Like, I tell you what, it's good for my lawn.
Being from California, we're not used to this sort of thing, and it's miserable and sticky, and there doesn't seem to be any AC here in the studio.
Ah, yes. The Wiz Kid from Wisconsin, Alex Kellar. What's cracking?
Miserable and sticky should be like a hipster album title.
That's true. That's a pretty good one. I don't hate it.
But I'm ready to get into it, man. Training right, camp is here. You know it's here when you come back from the weekend and have 550 unread emails.
Hello.
Crazy.
The NFL production machine has not stopped for a GD second over the weekend.
And the crazy thing, you know, and this is the crazy thing, man. This is going to be the last week where we don't actually have games.
No,
we have a game on Saturday.
First game.
And Thursday.
Thursday.
Oh, it's Thursday.
Hall of Fame is Thursday, right?
Thursday.
Hall of Fame game?
It's crazy. Yes,
yeah,
Hall of Fame
game. That's 3 days from now.
I love it. I absolutely love it.
Damn.
We got a big show in front of us here today, man. We're going to talk about bounce back players. MG, my guy Marcus Grant, wrote a great piece talking about Blake Bortles, Cam, Russell Wilson, Lamar Miller on the list, Dez Nuke, Julius Thomas on this list. Now, these guys aren't necessarily primed for a bounce back, but they are bounce back candidates, if that makes any sense. We'll talk about whether or not these guys will have a good 2017 after falling off a bit in 2016. We'll round out your show with a round of daily daps, but we start the show, as always, with your top headlines.
The camera highlights in the world of sports.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Whistles go woo!
I like turtles.
We continue to follow breaking news.
I watch the news because I'm a kid.
So y'all need to hide your kids, hide your wife.
And of course, I would be remiss without welcoming in those folks from Facebook Live. We'll answer your questions as they become available as well. If you would be oh so kind as to share this Facebook Live session, that would be much appreciated. We'll start in Indianapolis. Could Andrew Luck miss week one? Question mark. He's on the Colts preseason pup list. He's had some mysterious shoulder surgery. His throwing program has literally just begun and has been limited to throwing tennis balls, not footballs quite yet. So, again, could he miss week one? Well, he wouldn't say yes or no when asked about it by reporters. This is a quote. "There's no reason to freak out," Luck said. "I don't know what day it's going to be. I don't know what week. I don't know when, but I definitely will be better." I mean, that is about as lukewarm a response as you could give about will he miss week one.
Yeah, shouldn't he be definitive? I mean, dismissive of this being a ridiculous, of course I'm going to be there week one. This
right?
is ridiculous. Like, I don't even know why you guys are talking about
That's this. What kind of makes me pause and say, well.
He's basically saying he's missing the first 8 weeks.
Is it?
Jeez. Severe.
But when you think about, like, no, when you've got to grade it on a curve of athlete speak.
Isn't that right?
And what he's saying there is rather alarming.
I agree.
Because these guys don't like to admit that they're hurt, outside of Ben Roethlisberger. But most quarterbacks don't like to admit that they're hurt. And I don't know. Maybe he went to the – but I've never thought of Andrew Luck in that way, of somebody who needs that attention.
Right.
Like, his, you know, he's not threatening to retire or anything. So
again.
I think it's pretty serious.
Franchise over here steaming.
No, well, he's he knows. He knows I'm right. That's why he's like, I'm with you.
Yeah, we've discussed. Anyway, I watched the video of Luck talking to reporters, and it seems like he didn't want to – be definitive because he doesn't want to have that pressure and then rush himself back, be like, yeah, I'll be there week one. And then that sets a timetable for him to be back, and he doesn't want to rush it.
Yeah.
And he was talking about how he's finally, like, he's putting weight back on that he might have lost while he was in recovery. He said, I had surgery on my shoulder, but my entire body has been affected.
Oh, absolutely.
In recovery. So I'm very concerned that he's not throwing footballs yet. It's the beginning of the preseason.
Right.
I dropped him in my rankings to, I think, QB 12.
Wow, that's a big drop.
I mean, dude, we don't know when he's going to be back. I'm not going to
– Same.
I'm not really sure what his ADP is, but I'd imagine like
– I've seen fifth round.
Yes.
Which is crazy.
First six rounds, I'm not –
He's being drafted as a top four quarterback.
I'm
for
staying,
sure.
staying away.
Oh, man. Wow, outside the top 12. That seems a bit aggressive.
I think it's also worth noting. I mean, this is a guy who's still working his way back from an injury. Andrew Luck takes a lot of hits.
He does.
Between playing behind a bad offensive line, the fact that he will get out and run. He will take hits. So there's, you know, for all the great things he can do when he's healthy and available, there is risk involved. Maybe more than, you know, a lot of the other top, you know, three or four quarterbacks.
And he likes to stand back there and scan the field, man. He's not afraid. You know what I mean? He's not afraid to take a big hit, to make a big play. And I think they've been trying to limit that a little bit, doing that whole, hey, get the ball out quicker. But that's just not how he plays. But, I don't know.
He has taken a lot of sacks. I'm trying to actually find out how many he's had in compared to the league since he joined. Give me 1 second.
But I do think it's time to start taking stock in, like, maybe we should move T.Y. Hilton down. Maybe we should move Dante Moncrief down.
Andrew Luck is out of the offense, I mean, that entire offense.
Yeah.
I mean, sinks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I think Dante Moncrief takes a huge downgrade. I think T.Y. Hilton, he's a good enough player where, you know, regardless, he's going to see the targets, and you would think that he could try to make the most of them. But, man, I mean, that entire offense would definitely sink a bit in my mind.
But in his tier, though, with T.Y. Hilton, with some of the players that he's competing against for your draft position.
Right.
Against those guys, you would have to start sliding a little bit.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. Nuke Hopkins or T.Y. Hilton as we
Nuke
stand?
Nuke Hopkins.
Okay.
I'm so on board with Nuke Hopkins.
You're
last
ready.
Last year doesn't – It doesn't matter to me anymore, okay. Especially with everything with Brock Osweiler. That was an aberration. That's one of those. I mean, it's similar to me what Mike Evans was going through last year in drafts. And people are like, whoa, three touchdowns. I don't know if I want to touch this guy. It's like, yeah. That's going to be a misnomer on his stat sheet when you look back in a decade.
I got you.
Jeez, how did he have just three touchdowns a year? Right. And the same thing will happen.
We have a bit of breaking news here, but
we
just got an email that Adam Gase said Jay Ajayi is being evaluated for a concussion. Nothing conclusive yet. Could just, you know, have gotten bumped on the head and be okay, but something that we will now, of course, need to monitor.
He got mashed in practice.
Alex, I don't know if you ever found that stat. No, go ahead, Adam.
Right. I was going to say save that for after daps.
Oh, okay, there you go.
Right, we have to break that appropriately. Luck had been sacked 156 times in 70 games since he came into the league in 2012. It's around like the top 10 highest people who have been sacked.
Wow.
And he has the fewest games in – he's 11th of those people, and he's the only one – aside from Alex Smith to play in 71 or fewer games. Oh, I lied. Colin Kaepernick's been sacked a lot, too.
Yeah.
You know what?
But it's not great.
Well, no, Colin Kaepernick is number two in terms of sacks and hits. Number one in that same time period would be Cam Newton. And regarding that game plan, that new game plan in Carolina, oh, remember, we're going to keep Cam Newton in the pocket. We're going to keep him in the pocket. You know about that. I don't know if Cam Newton's buying in. This is what he told reporters. Quote, "That's my edge. You going to expect a lion not to roar? Question mark." He went on to say, "Over my career and body of work, the things that put me at an advantage most times is having the ability to run." Now, we'll get rid of all the nonsensical hot takes regarding Cam Newton's running ability, which we have seen in Sports Talk Radio, which is just nonsensical. It just drives me up the wall, but that's okay. From a fantasy perspective, what we have talked about, or at least what I have pounded on the table for, is the fact that Cam is Cam. He's been in the league long enough. He's been an MVP. He's seen success. He's played in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I'd never bought the idea that Cam Newton was going to buy into the idea of being a pocket passer, especially considering the fact that this guy is a 58%, or I think it's 58, yeah, 58% career completion percentage guy, right? So he is such a great player. But he's right. The reason he's great is because he's so versatile and because you can't really limit him in any one area. So, I don't know. To me, this is one of those things where, you know, if you're expecting him to be one of those pocket passing guys, I'm not seeing it. And the reason I bring it up is not necessarily for Cam Newton's fantasy value, but for somebody like Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah, and we saw last week when Cam was throwing for the first time on the practice field, his first pass went to Jonathan Stewart, so a running back. So they're trying to work on these shorter passes out of the backfield, and Christian McCaffrey needs to get up to speed there in that offense. But now Cam has a lot of weapons to dump the ball off to.
Sure.
You've got Greg Olsen.
Old reliable.
Yeah, and the two wide receivers on the outside, Kelvin Benjamin, Devin Funchess, and I think Cam is a good value at quarterback this year. I mean, he's primed for a bounce back. Last year was terrible.
Oh, my God. So bad.
He's going QB7 on average, according to Fantasy Pros.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
That sounds about right.
But you can wait. You can wait till like the ninth round probably to grab him, I feel like.
MG, your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I do think at some point he's never going to stop running. He's never going to be just a straight drop back pocket passer. But I also do think everybody around the Panthers, and I think Cam himself knows that he can't run quite as much as he did earlier in his career. Last year, he only ran 90 times. That was by far the lowest number of his career.
Yeah.
Such a big story about him last year was, you know, the feeling that he wasn't getting protected by the referees, that he was taking hits and that sort of thing. And I don't know that all of a sudden it's going to change this year. So there is going to have to be at least some change in the way he plays. Maybe not. He's never going to, you know, turn into Tom Brady and just stand back there and sling the ball around.
Wouldn't make sense.
It wouldn't make sense. It's not his game. It would hamper everything about the Panthers' offense. But I do truly believe that they want to get the ball out of his hands quickly and a little bit more than they have in the past. And so that is going to mean that maybe some of those designed runs aren't there.
Right.
Maybe they end up as short passes to whether it's McCaffrey or Curtis Samuel or Jonathan Stewart. I do think that we're going to see him run less.
Can we talk about Christian McCaffrey's, you know, fourth round draft price right now? It seems as if his ADP is starting to fall a little bit. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that drafters are starting to become a little bit savvy to the fact that maybe Cam Newton won't change as much as was anticipated.
Well, I also think people just finally come back to reality after the post-draft hype of like, oh my God, amazing player lands in good offense with talented quarterback. And then actually start to assess his realistic value and ceiling. Like when he was going, when he was getting drafted in the like late second, early third round, I think people were taking him at has had his absolute ceiling.
Yeah.
And then now that they've come back and like, okay, maybe I shouldn't jump that high on him. Like, you know, protect, insulate myself a little bit from the fact that Jonathan Stewart is going to see a bunch of carries and might steal a couple touchdowns. Like fourth is starting to get into a better range for him as a nice solid like RB2 pickup.
He's in the range of Spencer Ware, Ty Montgomery, Carlos Hyde, and Doug Martin for some reason.
I'd take the first three over him. Starting to get worried about Doug Martin after these reports that have been coming out of Tampa Bay.
I want no peace. No peace.
I loved Doug Martin as a value when you could get him in the eighth round.
Fourth round? What? No.
Hell no.
Hell no. I don't want any piece of that. Although it does fall off a cliff. It's Doug Martin, Mike Gillisley, Adrian Peterson are also in the fourth round, which is like, nope. I will.
Yeah, one zero part of zero part of Mike Gillisley in the fourth.
Mike Gillisley and Adrian Peterson. Come on, y'all. That doesn't make no kind of sense. All right, so there you go. Per 49ers. Oh, by the way, this is interesting. Christian McCaffrey right now in 12 team leagues, going 40th overall, 41st overall on Fantasy Football Calculator is Carlos Hyde, which brings me to San Francisco. Per 49ers.com, GM John Lynch said Carlos Hyde has looked, quote, tremendous. Hyde has apparently read the writing on the wall, I think, anyways. He's taken his conditioning to another level. He showed up to training camp at 228 pounds. It's the lightest he's ever been at the pro level. But Hyde himself says it's the lightest he's been since high school. Hashtag BSOHL.
Yeah.
This is a quote from Carlos Hyde. Literally, this is a quote. I'm in the best shape of my life right now.
Yeah. BSOHL forever.
Yeah, man. I absolutely love it. All right, so what do we make of these reports? We'll start with you, MG.
I mean, look, obviously he's heard the whispers, and he's heard the talk, you know, everything from he could lose his job to he might flat out be released. I mean, that's been the talk this offseason.
It's crazy.
I don't believe that. I think he'll be the starter. I think, you know, he'll see the bulk of the work. But I did find yesterday our pal TJ Hernandez over at 4for4 did a really interesting piece looking at how Kyle Shanahan as a play caller has sort of influenced things and the way he distributes the football. And one of the things I took away from it is generally Kyle Shanahan has not just, you know, featured one runner exclusively. He's worked guys in. I mean, we saw it a lot, obviously, the last couple years with Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman there. So I think you'll see Carlos Hyde get a fair share of the carries, maybe even more than 50% of them. But don't be surprised if you see Joe Williams work in a lot. I mean, this is a guy that both Shanahan and John Lynch really loved coming out of the draft. And, you know, at least on paper, he seems to fit with what Shanahan would like to do offensively with this club. So I think he's going to get some work. I still wouldn't completely discount Carlos Hyde. I still think he's going to be a big part of what they do offensively. But I would expect that there will be more of a rotation there in San Francisco than maybe we've seen the last couple years.
Carlos Hyde is starting to become one of my favorite mid-round guys because I feel like he has an opportunity in front of him to really not only grab a hold of this job, but again, because I think the offense is going to be better than it was last year, I think he's got a real opportunity to be a game changer in fantasy this year. And you're not investing, you know, a top three pick in the guy. I'm saying you're not going to draft him in the first three rounds. If you can get him in round four, round five in 10-team standard, he's starting to become one of those guys that I will heavily target, especially if I'm going wide receiver early in drafts.
Yeah, but somebody in that San Francisco offense is going to play well. And is the running back is going to benefit from having Kyle Shanahan there.
Right.
I'm just not confident that it's going to be Carlos Hyde. We've seen great moments out of him. Mm-hmm. There are the hit the B button moments.
Spin move against Minnesota.
In Minnesota. And if I'm playing daily fantasy, I am starting him week one no matter what, because that's usually what he does.
He kills
like, oh, my God, he's so great. And then he's like, yeah, I'm out. He's like, he's a good MC. He comes out, gets the crowd hype, and then he goes, all right,
pieces,
stick around. Enjoy Le'Veon Bell, everybody. Stick around for your headliner. You know, he actually, though,
yeah.
If I'm in a draft where you get the top, let's say one of the top three running backs, where you get, let's say you get David Johnson.
Okay.
The fourth round of Carlos Hyde is sitting there. Like, mm-hmm. I feel pretty comfortable at that moment, being like, all right, he's worth it because Kyle Shanahan has shown that he's a good coach.
You know what else I like about that, too, is the fact that you know the handcuff you want to get. You want to get Joe Williams.
Yeah, then you got to draft Joe Williams. And I think the Matt Breida thing was just like, hey, look at this guy who runs great in camps, unless we see. Although I guarantee you, he'll have a great preseason game, and everybody's going to be all about him. But it's troubling because you know one of those guys is, and you know that Shanahan's not afraid to go to the guy who is just the best back, because when he came to Atlanta, they, for whatever reason, and it's probably because Mike Smith tried to ruin his career, but felt like Devontae Freeman was not the right player.
Mike Smith tried to ruin his
career. Well, Mike Smith tried to ruin his own career by not going to Devontae. I told him Devontae Freeman was the best running back on his team, but he's like, I'm going to put out old ass Steven Jackson, and he's going to sit there and lay the dookie stinks all over the Georgia Dome.
Wow.
And that's what happened. He got fired. And you know what? Listen, you make the decision. That's what happens.
Wow. All right.
So I'm really interested. I know. This is part of the reason why I don't like drafting so late is that you get a chance to be like, well, let's see how this works out. Yeah. Let's see if Hyde shows something in the preseason or how this goes along. Like, I like to draft now, and you have to know. You have to make a decision. Is Hyde going to be the guy, or is it going to be Joe Williams?
I like it.
Somebody else. It's not going to be Tim Hightower. But who is it going
to
be?
We'll go down the 5 freeway. We'll go to L.A., our backyard. Chargers head coach Anthony Lynn was asked whether Mike Williams could miss the entire frickin' season. Lynn told reporters, quote, I'm hopeful that he's not. I'm hopeful that he's not. But who knows? I don't know. Close quote. Williams is already set to miss the team's entire training camp. What? The entire season?
What is in question right now?
Because
he was going to have surgery? Then he's like, no, he might not even miss a game. Now he might miss the whole season. I haven't seen a variance of an opinion like this since Taylor Swift. They were like, it's so crazy. Some people love it. Some people hate it. Like, what is happening with Mike Williams?
Wow. Alex Gailhar, your take.
I'm a little shook from that Mike Williams Taylor Swift comparison. I mean, I like it.
You guys laugh because that was a great tag.
It was good. I'm just trying
all
to
all of you.
I'm trying to come back.
No, that was good. Great. What? No, that
it was a
good.
Solid tag.
It was good.
It was really good.
Okay, so I think you know this is kind of it's kind of been in the works for a while. Like people were still wondering what was going to happen with Mike Williams. So Tyrell Williams is still the far better value.
Yeah.
And with these question marks hanging around Mike Williams, he's starting to drift into almost undraftable territory. And
right.
You're going to wait and pick him up off the waiver wire.
I mean, he's a rookie.
He's a rookie in a crowded offense.
Right.
With back injury concerns right now.
Who's not getting training camp reps.
I don't get it. I think I agree with you. If he was healthy and he was out there, I would love the upside pairing him with Phillip Rivers. But given his current situation, I tend to agree with you. I don't know if he's draftable.
Unless he gets out there and starts balling, like, we can't really look at him.
I mean, I know it's
a good piece of advice.
I know it's still, you know, relatively early, but can we just talk about the fact that, you know, first-round wide receivers have had a rough go of it the last couple of years?
Yeah. That's a good point. Laquon Treadwell.
I mean, Corey Coleman had
Josh
his issues.
Doxon.
Josh Doxon had his
Odell
issues.
Odell Beckham Jr.
Kevin White.
Okay, now
– yeah.
Right. I mean, so it's like, yeah, like I said, it's only within the last maybe 2 or 3 years. But, you know, first-round wide receivers.
Philip Dorsett was a first-rounder, too?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
But Odell's the one who ruined it for us.
Well, it was his whole class. Like him, Mike Evans, Kelvin Benjamin.
Right,
they
like
all
those
came
guys
out
came
and
balled out
like
good.
Nuts
like immediately.
So now we assume. Well, a lot of those receivers go to not great situations.
Yeah.
And that was the one thing that I really liked about Sandy. Oh, I did it now.
Hey! Yeah, buddy.
The Chargers. Was that he was coming into a spot where he wasn't going to be the number one guy. Where Keenan Allen was going to be there, draw the coverage. You still got Antonio Gates, Hunter Henry, guys who can occupy the field and draw attention away from him. So I thought that Mike Williams, of any of the guys that we were talking about, could have the opportunity to go out and be a Odell Beckham Jr. type of receiver because he had a good quarterback and he was in a good offense, a passing offense, and he could easily step in. And the Chargers just roll out 6'4 dudes every year. It doesn't matter.
Seemingly,
like,
yes.
It doesn't. They're in create a player mode on Madden. They're like, yeah, 6'4, super fast. Let's make his arms super big.
Yeah.
So I thought it was a perfect opportunity for him, but now he looks to be more like Kevin White, who was in a similar situation as well.
You're right.
With Alshon and everything going on, but just couldn't get on the field.
Yeah.
We go to Facebook Live. Billy Mitchell, who is a great fan of the podcast and of our Facebook Live sessions.
Thanks, Billy.
Yeah, Billy, what's up? With the rookie hype train starting to slow down, is Leonard Fournette, he's going in the second to third round. I get that he's a starting RB, but is that price worth it? Leonard Fournette in the second to third round, good price tag. We'll go around the horn. Matt Franciscovich, what do you think?
I am hesitant to take him that early right now till we see what's going on there.
What's the hesitation? You just don't think he's that good, or
it's the Jaguars?
Oh,
man.
Oh, the offense is not there.
Yeah,
no, I got you. No, I get you. All right,
Frank, how dare you,
Gilhar? Your thoughts?
No, I'm hesitant as well. They still have a lot of money tied in Chris Ivory. T.J. Yeldon's still there to potentially steal passing down work. We saw a beat reporter earlier. Of course, this basically means nothing, but like Chris Ivory was getting the first crack at first team reps with the team. Like even if they skew super run heavy.
Yeah.
Like Blake Bortles turns the ball over a ton. That's going to steal some scoring opportunities.
You're
like
right.
There's a lot of red flags potentially for taking that guy who's not as like, you know, when Todd Gurley came to the Rams that year, he was the guy. There was zero question that was his backfield. And same with Zeke last year. Like he was the guy. And there are just these specters of these other two backs who have had some fantasy success lingering around.
Plus,
Jaguars.
To me, it's interesting that Fournette's not in that same class to me because
because Ezekiel Elliott went to a backfield that had a 1,000-yard running back still there.
Right. It had Darren McFadden.
And Freddie Morris.
And Fred Morris. And then we forget, too.
Freddie Morris hasn't done anything in like 3 years.
No, it's true. And apparently he's
neither had Darren
he's
McFadden.
On the but the other thing is we forget that in St. Louis, too, Trey Mason had a great year the year prior to Todd Gurley showing up. Not saying that Trey Mason was.
I believe he was like out of the picture at the start of the year, though, with a number of off-field things when Gurley was coming in. Yeah. It wasn't like he was there vying for the starting role. I'm pretty sure he was like suspended or released.
I think because who started that at first for – because it wasn't Todd Gurley.
I don't know. It was like Cunningham.
Was it Benny Cunningham still?
I forget his name.
All right.
He had a great second half. Zach Stacy?
Oh, my God.
I don't think
or was he on a different
out.
Team at that point? I don't remember.
All these Rams.
It was Curtin Jerker McGee.
Dude, Zach Stacy had a decent second half a couple years ago.
There
and that
go.
Just fell off the face of the earth.
MG, second or third round grade for Leonard Fournette. Good, bad value? What do you think?
It's a little spicy for me.
I mean, that's what you're going to have to pay.
Yeah,
and well, especially if Blake Bortles keeps throwing pick after pick in practice. You get these reports of him throwing 5 interceptions, including a pick 6. You keep getting more reports like that. That price is going to keep going up for Leonard.
It was Benny Cunningham for the record. He had 16 carries in week 1 of that year. He had
37 for the whole year.
Yeah.
Wow.
16 in week 1.
And Trey Mason led the team with a whole lot of 7 rushing attempts in week 2.
There you go. All right. So there you go. Adam, rank your thoughts. Second, third round grade for Leonard Fournette. Good value? No.
I've started to come around on Leonard Fournette because I was at first Adam, I was maybe. Like not – I was not going to get into this because, you saw Geis take over for him at LSU, and you're like, right. Okay, that's a system and everything like that. But Doug Marrone came out, I believe it was last week, and said he wants to run the ball on every down. He wasn't kidding around. And I think, having Blake Bortles as your quarterback will do that to you, where you're like, yeah, we're running. Like, we're not going to – it's like the dude who's been pounding, pitchers of margaritas all night. Like, this dude's not driving. Like, we're either going to Uber or we're going to do something else. And so I think that they now want to run the ball a lot. And I feel that Chris Ivory and T.J. Yeldon, of course, they're there. But you got to give the veterans their opportunity. But you don't want to just hand anything to the rookie, which
right.
is fine.
Right.
He's going to go out. He's going to earn that job. And he's going to be in an offense where he's going to be giving every opportunity to run the ball between 20 to 25 times a game. And just volume alone. And that, to me, puts him into the third round.
Okay.
Can I just say about Leonard Fournette? Yeah, the Jaguars want to be a run-first team. But
yeah.
So have the Browns for the last 3 years. So have all these
crappy
Isaiah
Crowell,
teams.
And Isaiah Crowell was pretty good. And everybody's projecting him to be great this year.
He had a good start and then fell off when the Browns got really bad in the middle of the season. But all I'm saying
the Jags are going
to
be good.
Every team wants to be run-heavy.
Okay.
But when you get into the game script and you fall behind – you can't be run heavy or you're going to lose. And the Jaguars have had the lowest scoring rushing offense in the NFL last year, and they haven't rushed for double-digit touchdowns as a team since 2010.
But they're going to be in a lot more games this year. That defense is improved. They're going to be more competitive. I know we say this every year, like, they're going to go for the, they're going to be competitive for the playoffs.
Jaguars
are
still undefeated in the last 8 out of 8 off seasons, guys.
wow.
The jokes are the jokes, but I mean, at some point, you put all that talent together, and I hate to put it on a small sample size of what Doug Marrone was able to do in 2 games last year, but when you put in Doug Marrone, who was one of the top coaching candidates, he had done pretty well in Buffalo, and you combine that with Tom Coughlin, really bringing some stability and order to that franchise. I think that if there's ever any year where they're going to come back and finally start to fulfill that promise, it's going to be this one, and it's going to be based on having a strong defense and being able to run the football.
It's a great segue into our bounce back candidate series here. MG, my guy Marcus Grant, wrote a wonderful piece. Find it, NFL.com/Grant. Did I get that right?
That's it.
Okay, there you go. NFL.com/Grant. I was like, is it /Marcus Grant? No, it's /Grant. All right, there you go. Because one of the candidates that, a lot of folks are wondering, is this guy going to bounce back? Blake Bortles, 3,900 passing yards last year, 23 pass touchdowns, 16 interceptions. Yet, despite the horrific actual real-life gameplay, he was your quarterback 9 last year in standard scoring leagues. MG's take, according to the piece, a top 10 finish yet again for Blake Bortles.
Yeah.
Walk us through the thought process.
I think it's less because Blake Bortles is going to be hashtag good and more because it's kind of a function of scoring in fantasy now. I mean, because...
You mean it's stupid?
Well, yeah. I mean, like, at some point, like, I feel like, and I think we discussed this on Twitter a while back, like, yeah. At some point, you need sort of an escalation of negativity for quarterbacks who throw multiple picks. I mean, like, having every pick be -2 doesn't hurt quite as much if the guy throws, 3-4 picks in a game. I mean, yeah, sure, it hurts, but it's -8 as opposed to having it maybe being an escalating scale where after the
escalating
second
one, scale. Ooh.
After, something after the second pick, it becomes -3 or -4 or sure. Something.
It's kind of like the opposite way of like how kickers get 4 points for a 40-yarder and 5 points for a 50-yarder.
Right.
You're saying the other way. If you throw that third pick.
Right, then it's got to hurt more, right. Or something like that. It's otherwise.
Ooh, how about this? This is an idea. How about this? How about -1 for your first, -2 for your second, -3 for your third?
Okay, so the number.
Yeah, you know what I'm
all
saying?
Right, so it corresponds. I get that. So I look at Blake Bortles, and we can all, I think, objectively say that last year was a bad year for him, and he's a guy who turns the ball over far too much.
Yeah,
The touchdown passes tend to come as a result of him putting his team in a bad situation early in ball games and being forced to throw the football later. So, I don't know that any of that changes. So as long as quarterback scoring is what it is, Blake Bortles will do enough to be a top 10 quarterback, and we'll sit and we'll point and laugh and say, "Ew, he sucks," but. At the end of the day, his overall numbers will put him as a QB1.
I feel like you should make it so Aaron Rodgers' interceptions are worth -50. Just to even it up. Isn't that the same? It's the same rationale for having touchdown passes 4 points.
I don't like
make
it.
All the quarterbacks even.
Right.
Like, no, let the good quarterbacks be good.
Yeah.
And I like that. I wish you could do, like, pick sixes count for -6.
That would be cool.
Should be negative.
That would be devastating for players like Bortles.
Yeah,
I'm gonna.
Which is fine.
Yeah, no, I mean it makes sense. Yeah. It'd just be hilarious.
It would be absolutely awesome. Anyone think that Blake Bortles actually might just completely and utterly fall off? I think there's a chance.
Sure.
If he's that bad and he's costing his
when Kaepernick's their starting quarterback,
how does he have any confidence? The coaches are like, ideally, we want Blake Bortles to attempt 0 passes every game.
Right?
How can you have your quarterback be confident going into the season saying stuff?
I mean, he's got the weapons on the outside. Right?
Yeah.
He's got weapons on the outside.
There's talented wide receivers there. But
I just think if he completely and utterly falls off, I mean, there's going to be whispers at the midway point as to whether or not Blake Bortles should start.
You know
what I mean?
Oh, yeah. He's on the hot seat.
I'm not touching Blake Bortles in fantasy this year.
0. No way.
The issues he's had in the past, the way that team wants to shift to a run-heavy focus, and also to throw back to the Leonard Fournette thing, I really like Leonard Fournette as a player. I just don't want to draft him in the second round. But like, there's just too many red flags around Bortles this year when there are so many good deep quarterbacks available in fantasy. You could get the Andy Dalton bounce back, you get Tyrod Taylor for free in drafts.
Oh my God, yeah.
Matthew Stafford falls into like the way late double-digit rounds too, and he'd be a serviceable player.
Oh, for sure.
Mariota, Winston, Carr, like.
Too many.
No way would I touch Bortles.
Yeah. Yeah.
No chance.
I hear that. Hey, MG, give us your take on Cam Newton in 2017.
I think Cam is, you know, I feel like we're not going to see great things. Like, you know, that season a couple years ago, I think, is the outlier in his career. I think he's going to be a guy, as we talked about, he's not going to run as much, I don't believe.
He's consistently been a top five fantasy quarterback.
Yeah, he has. I worry still about him kind of recovering from
shoulder
surgery in the offseason.
That's the big one.
I don't know if he's going to run quite as much. You know, I just think you're going to see kind of depressed numbers from him across the board. And he'll be, you know, kind of a fringe QB1 or a nice situational guy. I think what we saw from a couple years ago is definitely the outlier. And I think, you know, if that's what you're expecting him to get back to, you're going to be disappointed this year.
Because of his 2015, because of his name value, Cam Newton right now, in my mind anyway, is being overdrafted. I agree with all the points that you bring up, that the fact that here's a guy that's recovering from shoulder surgery to his throwing arm, and the fact that they want to at least, you know, limit the number of runs, which is a big time, you know, as they've said in fantasy, a cheat code
right
for fantasy quarterbacks. I agree with MG. I just think, you know, his fantasy numbers will be somewhat muted in 2017. I don't know if the ceiling is there. Does anyone else feel like, okay, here's a guy that absolutely could be a top three guy again?
That's the problem, because Alex brought up Matt Stafford, who was it was miserable last year living through him.
Yes,
with the
was.
Week to week, it was awful. But there is a much higher ceiling for him, where I could conceivably picture him having a top five fantasy season. I don't think Blake gets there.
No. Cam Newton.
Oh, I'm sorry, Cam. The one thing, that's what I mean. The one thing, though, is he's so dependent on those rushing touchdowns. That's the one thing. It's like, I just don't.
You take that off the table.
Well, even if he gets it, it's too volatile. Like, it's too volatile. You can't really expect it every week. And similar to what Stafford was doing last year, and I'm sorry, in the comparison, is Stafford was having those games where he would only throw one touchdown. But Stafford at least gives you a little bit with the passing yards. Cam Newton could be very efficient and very effective and throw for 187 yards, have a touchdown, maybe throw a pick. But if he doesn't get the rushing yards for you.
Right. Maybe he has 30 rushing yards or something, but it's.
Yeah.
But even in 2017, will he get that? We're not sure.
As much as he says he wants to run, you never know what's going to happen.
I just think at the end of the day with a guy like Cam, like when he's in a situation where he has to make a quick decision, he's going to rely on his instincts.
Yeah.
And that's
go
the run.
With his legs.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
I would
say he's been so phenomenal.
Even if he doesn't have as many rushing yards, the bigger factor for him would be rushing touchdowns because standard scoring, those are still 6 points.
Good
and
point.
If they get to the goal line, Cam might just call his own number a couple times.
That's what
or
I'm
he
saying.
Scrambles and gets in, or he just does the Tom Brady plunge. And if he with that gigantic frame, you know, pokes his head into the end zone five different times, that's a lot of lot more points than a quarterback like Phil Rivers or Matt Stafford or somebody else who's not going to run as much.
Especially now with all the weapons they have, the defense is going to have to pay attention elsewhere other than Cam running up the middle at the goal line. You know?
He was the QB17 last year, which surprised me. I didn't realize that he was
that bad.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because he seems so fantasy relevant, but really when you think about it, QB7, he's utterly irrelevant for fantasy purposes. I'm trying to look up where he's getting drafted right now. So in 12 team leagues, he's being drafted in the top 85, right? So a top 100 player. Mm-hmm. If you're in a 12 team league, he's going at the end of round 7, early round 8. If you're in a 10 team league, that's like, you know, round 9, round 10 territory. So in his same class, we're looking at guys like Russell Wilson, Ben Roethlisberger, and Jameis Winston.
Damn, that's tough.
Yeah, that is tough.
Because it's like if you get to the 10th round and you're like, I'm ready to take a quarterback now. And
Russell Wilson,
Ben
Roethlisberger,
you have to decide between
those four
guys.
That's not,
I think it would come down to Wilson or Cam for me, probably.
I like Wilson
a little bit more.
Yeah, I think I like Wilson more.
Because he can throw the deep ball. But I've just had such bad luck with Cam. I've had bad luck with quarterbacks a lot of the time. Just the volatility seems to be – I get it that he does have those rushing touchdowns, and it's great when it happens. But, man, he's tough. He really is tough to live with week to week.
Oh, yeah, big time.
I'll say this. I like the week-to-week upside, and I know it's going to be super volatile regarding Ben Roethlisberger. Now, obviously, when he goes on the road, you might want to hedge your bets a little bit, but the fact that he gets Martavis Bryant back, at least we think, at least we hope.
True.
And you know, if we could get a full season of Le'Veon Bell as well, I don't know, man. I like the positional upside of Ben Roethlisberger. If he's there, you know, if I could wait on Big Ben, if I could get him in the 10th round, I'll take it. I'll take it.
Yeah.
All right. So we've beaten Cam Newton into the, and yeah, it's so sad because he's such.
I love. I'm such a huge fan of his.
You know what I'm
saying? I love playing.
But for fantasy purposes,
I broke up with him in fantasy. I think a couple of years ago. It was just too much.
Russell Wilson is another quarterback that is at least a bounce back candidate. I'll direct you to the website NFL.com/Grant for you to find the analysis from MG. But the overall view is that Russell Wilson should be a top 10-ish quarterback. We'll go to the running back position. Todd Gurley, I feel like we've beaten into the ground as well. MG, you've got him predicted as a top 25-ish running back, if I'm not, you know,
I mean, there's still so much uncertainty in what the Rams want to do with McVay, and yeah, you know, there's on the one hand you hear that maybe they're going to use Todd Gurley more in the passing game, but then you think, you know, they're trying to find their West Coast version of Chris Thompson that may not be Gurley,
right?
Lance Dunbar,
right? So I don't know. There's just a lot of uncertainty there. On top of it, can they open holes for him? Will he show the same confidence he had his rookie year? There's just a lot to kind of figure out.
Talk to me about Lamar Miller, though. You've got him projected, and this is a big number, 1,308.
Yeah, I mean, I think really maybe it's too simple to say that, you know, the change at quarterback is going to have such a major impact, but I really do believe it. I mean, I really do believe that you know, having somebody new under center is going to change the complete outlook. I mean, you could just see by the end of last year the frustration. You could see it with New Hopkins. You could see it all over that offense, yeah, the frustration that their quarterback couldn't move the offense, couldn't deliver the football, and that impacted everything they did. At the same time, Miller himself, I think, kind of wore down. He got that workload that so many of us had wanted him to get when he was in Miami. It never really happened.
That's right.
It happened last year, and by the end of the year, he looked like he was kind of worn down. So I think they will help keep him fresh with Deontay Foreman being there. He'll get some of that work there just to kind of keep Miller ready to go. Yeah, I did say the 8 touchdowns. My one fear, though, is that Foreman ends up being that goal line back and maybe takes some of those away from him. So that certainly is a concern. But I just do think that with a slightly lighter workload and hopefully a quarterback that can take some of the pressure off of him, yeah, that you'll start to see Lamar Miller be the guy that we always hoped he could be.
How about this? I mean, 8 total doesn't sound too bad, right? We're talking about maybe 5 on the ground, 3 through the air.
That's possible.
That's
doable.
That seems like a high total for me.
It's a ceiling.
What could be a very low-scoring offense once again.
He had 6 last year.
Yeah.
Total.
Exactly.
So 2 more? You don't see 2? They were like one of the worst teams in the red
Right.
zone.
But he got a lot of volume though last year.
New Hopkins is still in the mix. They've got Dante Foreman. Like, yeah, Deshaun Watson can run. Yeah. Will Fuller might learn to catch more consistently. So, like, there are options there. It just feels like giving 8 touchdowns to him on a potentially low-scoring offense,
I feel like
either starting Tom Savage or a rookie, is questionable.
To me, I think it's a ceiling. I think MG got the ceiling.
Right? Yeah.
1,308, that sounds like a ceiling to me.
So. I'm scared of Lamar Miller this year, though.
Yeah.
How about Jeremy Hill, though? Last year had 839 rush yards, 9 rushing TDs. That's crazy.
Yeah.
He finished as a top 20 running back because, in large part, due to those ground scores. MG, your take on Jeremy Hill, if I could paraphrase you, I think you said Jeremy Hill is dead.
Yeah. You know.
What is dead may never die. So you know he's getting 8 touchdowns this year. This is a guy that's going to get 8 touchdowns.
He could really, like, fall forward into the end zone, like, 8 times this year. I think this is sooner rather than later going to become the Joe Mixon show. Hill's going to be a rotational back. And you know, maybe that's what saves his value. That's sort of what saved his value the last couple of years, is being that guy who finds his way into the end zone, because he hasn't really done much else of note since his rookie season. If that continues, then he will still have, you know, a modicum of fantasy value. But, you know, at this point, I think we've seen what he is the last couple of years. And as much as the Bengals try to talk him up and say, we're going to make him a big part of what we do.
Yeah.
The performance doesn't warrant that. Like, I just, I'm not buying it. And I just, like I said, I think this becomes the Joe Mixon show sooner rather than later.
All right.
Can,
so
can we just use this opportunity to talk about the fact that Gio Bernard is back on the field
and apparently
people
healthy.
Are saying he looks amazing,
right,
making cuts and like speeding around the field, which a week ago, the story was Gio's going to miss the first few weeks of the season, and all of a sudden he's back there doing things.
Yeah.
It's weird. They bring in a guy who can do everything that he can and mm-hmm. was doing it really well at a college level, and suddenly he's healthy as an ox.
Like, that just
hey!
That just crowds the situation even more.
Look at me.
Yeah.
It's a good point. That's a very good point.
I want to say, I want to give a shout out, because while we're talking about Hill, Joe Goodberry, if you guys don't follow him on Twitter, is at Joe Goodberry, just like it sounds, spelled exactly like it sounds, J-O-E. Very smart and Bengals writer, very close to the team, has been doing a lot of the stuff. He projected the Bengals running backs, especially based on this Bernard news, for 165 carries for Mixon, 150 for Gio, and 75 for Hill. He thinks it's going to be a pretty clear committee split from what he knows about the team and how they have these backs and doing that stuff.
So. All right, let's say Joe Mixon gets, you know, 160-ish, 170 carries.
Yeah.
Is he worth it from a fantasy perspective, given his price tag right now? Because he's going...
He's got like a round 3 ADP these days.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He's going in round 3. It seems as if that would cap his value, no?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be concerned at that level, especially with... I mean, part of, I think, why people were getting so hyper on Mixon was we didn't know Bernard's health status before training camp. And
that's
now that
point.
He's coming back out and balling around,
yeah. Yeah.
He's been a very good player for this team for the last several years, whether it's been in a limited workload or a more featured capacity years ago. So, like... And they might not want to saddle Mixon with a ton of carries right away as a rookie and risk, like, creating Jeremy Hill 2.0. Not that they're the same player, but that could be in the team's mind, so... I don't know. This we're going to have to watch the split in the preseason games and stuff, but this Bernard coming back and somebody like Joe thinking that it could be split like that has me concerned if Mixon at his current ADP.
Yeah,
I would agree with that. All right, let's go to the wide receiver position. Dez Bryant last year, 796 receiving yards. Despite that low yardage total, still had 8 receiving touchdowns, which is – that's just bananas. It's just bananas for a wide receiver to get 8 receiving touchdowns. I mean, and we're talking about Dez Bryant in a low-volume passing attack. It's just craziness. Top 25 wide receiver last year. MG, your takeaways on his 2016, and what do you project in 2017?
Oh, my biggest thing is that for Dez, he just has to stay healthy, and that the last couple of seasons has sort of been an issue for him, just staying on the field.
Yep.
And I think I feel like that at least had some sort of impact on the chemistry of working with Dak Prescott, just because he physically wasn't there. And we saw Cole Beasley start to get a larger target share in that offense. So I think that as long as those two are together, Dak and Dez, and get that work, then I think you're going to see Dez continue to get a large share of the targets. We know he just has a nose for the end zone. He's shown that throughout his career. So it's really just a matter of if he can get back to that range. I don't know that he gets back to the 130, 140 targets that he was seeing when Tony Romo was the quarterback. It's a different offense now. They're still going to be run heavy. You're still going to work Ezekiel Elliott so much into what they do. But if Dez can get back in the range of 100 to 115 targets, I think you start to see him get back at least closer to that 1,000-yard mark, even if he doesn't get there. So he gets closer to 1,000 yards. If he can still stay around 8 to 10 touchdowns, I think that's a pretty good output for him.
He's so elite around the red zone.
He's one of the best in the league. I mean, like you said, Marcus, when he was scoring all those touchdowns, he has had in games where he's put in his seasons, he's been in the league for 7 years. He's had 5 seasons with playing at least 13 games, and this past one was his lowest touchdown total at 8.
Right.
Otherwise, it was 9, 12, 13, 16.
He's insane.
And when you're looking at him for fantasy, he's a better standard option because, like you said, his targets are going to depress. He's never been a massive target guy. Like,
he's never had 100 receptions.
It's 92 and 93 were his highest. But even in a couple of those years with Romo, 2012, only 138 targets. 2014, only 136.
Yeah.
But because of his scoring prowess, it makes him such a better option. And, like, the team will still turn to him around the red zone. Like, teams might stack it up to stop Ezekiel Elliott, and then Dak will just go, boop.
Yep, Dez Bryant, there he is. Right now, he's got an ADP in the late second round. His comp in that area, T.Y. Hilton and Amari Cooper. I'll tell you what, given the Andrew Luck news, and given the fact that Amari Cooper still has Michael Crabtree there, hogging up all those looks, give me Dez Bryant all day long compared to those two guys.
Yeah, I kind of feel the safest about him. Cooper probably has the highest ceiling of those guys.
Yeah.
And if Luck is healthy for the first season, I'd probably take T.Y. first among them. But as things stand right now, I think Dez is probably at the end of round two, the one to grab there.
Doug Baldwin's also in that mix too.
Yeah, people are taking Doug Baldwin a little later. You know, they're taking him, you know, in that, you know, mid-third round,
just
which
keep,
is
keep disrespecting Angry Doug, folks.
Yeah.
Like, to jump back, we didn't really touch on Russell Wilson, but why I think he's great, I think I might have them the highest out of all of us at among our quarterback rankings, yeah, is that that offense has continued to gain more pass attempts. They finally figured out what to do with Jimmy Graham last year, and we saw him return to the Jimmy Graham of old. And their backfield is just a mess right now. So what are they going to lean on when they need to win games more? The arm of Russell Wilson. You also got Paul Richardson ascended in the playoffs last year, and Tyler Lockett, if he can return fully healthy, is another great weapon. That's all of a sudden a loaded passing offense with a bunch of question marks in the backfield. Like, this could be a great season for Russell Wilson.
We've hit on Nuke Hopkins a little bit in talking about Lamar Miller. The other player on MG's list would be Julius Thomas, but look, I hate to spoil it, but you know Julius Thomas is going to be waiver wire fodder. So if you want to read the
spoiler alert,
if you want to read the entire list, NFL.com/Grant. All right, let's close out your show with a round of Daily Daps.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
This is the day.
Daps and hugs. Give me daps, cause I be scribbling rap.
Give me dapping up, daps about, daps. Daps.
All right, daily DAP time. We shall start with MG, my guy, Marcus Grant. What's up?
A couple things. One, I'm not going to spoil it, but last night's episode of Game of Thrones, my goodness.
Lit.
Spoil it.
I'm not going to spoil it.
Just say what happened.
Way to spoil it, bro.
I'm just going to say that
somebody died.
Well, I had no idea the episode was going to be lit. How dare you?
Hey, the blonde chick died.
On an episode, on a show built around terrible people doing terrible things to one another, this one featured a lot of terrible people doing the ultimately terrible things to one another.
Okay.
With one hell of a mic drop at the end of it, I'll say that.
What, yeah, did they have a wedding and not have an open bar?
Right, exactly.
Exactly.
That was the quote.
That's what the Red Wedding is, right?
That was the quote.
It was a cash bar.
a cash bar that only serves cab sauv.
Also, I want to give Daily Dap to a couple of coworkers. I did a little project that I put out over the weekend, or over on Friday, that excited about.
Yeah.
But thanks to Dylan Milner and Brandon Marcus for helping me put together the Choose Your Own Adventure story.
Have you guys seen this thing?
Yeah, it was awesome.
It was like a lot of fun.
Holy hell.
I didn't even know you could do that.
Like, Daily Daps to Marcus Grant.
It's something I had in mind for a while. I was trying to get it together. And just like a big, big thanks to Dylan and Brandon for helping me put that together. I'm really excited about
For those folks who have not seen this thing, it's on YouTube. Marcus Grant wrote a Choose Your Own Adventure fantasy story.
It's my pinned tweet, by the way. You just go to my Twitter page.
Yeah, so at Marcus G. But, man, this thing is wildly creative. Wildly creative. I would highly recommend you guys go to Marcus's Twitter and go check it out. It's a Choose Your Own Adventure fantasy story that he wrote. And man, I've never seen this format, or I guess YouTube, be used in this way, utilized in this way. And I think it's brilliant. I think it's absolutely brilliant. So kudos to you, man. It was really, really cool. And I was like, wow, what a great idea.
Thanks.
What an absolutely great idea. So please go check that out. Alex Gellhart, give me a Daily Dap.
Two quick ones. Okay. First, Daily Dap to Sam Shepard, actor and playwright. He passed away this morning.
What?
Or last night.
Yep.
He played Chuck Yeager in the movie The Right Stuff, which if you've never seen, is a phenomenal movie, because it's all about that Mercury 7 team, which is like John Glenn, Chuck Yeager, all these guys, some of the first guys to go into space, and just their total like cavalier, badass, like risk everything kind of attitude about advancing, you know, America and the space program and stuff. It's a really great movie. But Sam Shepard's been in a ton of other great stuff. He was in Bloodline. I haven't watched Bloodline. He was in Black Hawk Down. And he was a playwright. He won the Pulitzer Prize in the late 70s for one of his plays. So a great talent, and somebody who's probably underappreciated in this day and age of people who haven't watched as many old films. So go check out his stuff. And then Daily Dap number two is a book I'm reading. I think I might have shouted it out a while ago, so I was just starting it, but I'm almost done now, and it's just such a fascinating and like heart-wrenching book. It's called Evicted by Matt Desmond, and it's nonfiction, and this like Harvard professor followed along kind of like eight different people in the inner city of Milwaukee at varying different like levels of poverty, and just talked about how hard it is for those people in the housing market and the system and its successes and failures and things like that. So it follows a woman who owns a bunch of properties, follows a couple impoverished families, some people that live in trailer parks and stuff like that. And it is just it's a brutal, really enlightening read on something that, you know, not many of us like know a ton about or experience, and just how the system works and where its success and failures are. So I would encourage everybody to go read it. It's a really, really good book.
There you go. I'll give a daily daps out to John Jones. Spoiler alert. Maybe I should have said spoiler before I said John Jones.
You never know, because it could have been his last fight had he lost.
You could have said going out with a heroic loss and like pulling a Rocky, like from Rocky One. Like,
do we really have to start? It's a live sporting event.
That's true. That's true.
Game of Thrones is almost a live sporting event.
Yeah, the only reason I say that is because I myself never watch these fights live. I have to watch them delayed. I usually watch them the next day. And that's what happened with this fight. Anyway, saw it last night. But yeah, man, it was wow, what a performance by John Jones, and a lot of pressure was riding on his shoulders. But holy good God, he has been away from the octagon forever, and he came in and fought one of the best UFC fighters of all time,
of course,
and dismantled him,
crushed him.
And it was crazy too, because the broadcast team was trying to build up DC, like, hey, he's losing these rounds, but you know, he's in the fight. And I'm like, yeah, but he's losing these rounds. And then he got absolutely crushed by John, and then afterwards too, I love the fact that John Jones called out Brock Lesnar.
Oh,
that
yeah.
is a fight. Hello, give me that fight.
Doesn't John Jones have two brothers in the NFL?
He does. Arthur Jones and Chandler,
Chandler
they
Jones.
All three of them went to high school in the town where I'm from, Binghamton High School in upstate New York.
That's right.
Whoa.
That's exactly right.
Home of the Rumble Ponies, right?
The Rumble Ponies.
The Rumble Ponies.
Yes.
Correct. That's the
That's
minor
your high school mascot?
Team.
No.
I went
the minor league ball.
I went to Vestal High School, which is like a town outside of Binghamton.
Okay.
So there you go.
Binghton was like one of our rivals.
But John
Jones. You went to the rival high school outside of your city.
What's up?
You went to the rival high school outside of your city.
No.
Yes.
It's hard to explain.
What explain.
Binghamton High School was a rival to Vestal High School, which is where I went.
But you were from
Binghamton.
I'm from another town called Apple Aiken.
There you go.
I was getting all too confused.
I know. That's
now.
What I. That's why I said
I
it's
going to know.
But it was
trying to get some dirt. And
it
was, like it's not.
It was
worth.
Kind
it's
of no, a claim to fame in the local newspaper. The Jones brothers.
We're going to. We're going to have to. We have to settle this on our next podcast, which is all about the upstate New York school system.
Well,
right.
No, that kind of stuff.
I didn't
happened.
Mean for it to go down that road.
Well, no, if you have an open district, because Toby Gerhart, former Jag, actually lived in Corona, but went to Norca, which would have been a rival to a couple of the Corona schools.
And you didn't appreciate that.
I didn't care. He wasn't that good. We beat him.
Oh. All right.
Cool. Heisman candidate wasn't that good, apparently. Okay. Alex Gilhar, give
Wait,
me.
Wait, I already gave you
him.
Mine.
Oh, sorry.
We need to go to franchise.
We beat him. That's why.
Okay. I see franchise.
Unimpressive.
My daily dap is going to go to, I have two. One, my Game of Thrones Fantasy League. I am currently in second place.
Oh, hell yeah.
And all my other buddies who like to brag about how much more they know about the show than me.
Okay.
Yeah, well, suck it, because I'm beating you. And two...
He drafted old Lady Minerva.
And two, on Friday afternoon, I was alerted there was a suspect in a crime in, I believe, San Diego County somewhere on the market. I was alerted to this police sketch of this suspect who looks exactly like me. And the San Diego sheriff tweeted this out. And said, have you seen this person? And I said, I better get inside as soon as possible, because if the cops see me, they're going to arrest me.
I called the cops. I said, I got him.
Apparently, I followed up. There was an arrest made in the case. But how much does that look like me? It's me.
You should turn it to the Facebook Live camera.
Isn't
maybe
it,
like,
this is unbelievable.
Isn't that a famous meme of the guy?
Look at that.
There's an NBC4 guy.
Oh, my
Lord.
ABC.
ABC7.
No, ABC7.
Mark
Brown.
Mark Brown.
It was Mark Brown.
Was that a joke? Was that, did that?
I don't know.
I don't know.
The meme is Mark Brown reporting, and the police sketch is right over his shoulder. It looks exactly like
Wow.
But that, I don't know if there's any validity to that Mark Brown.
Right?
But this one is spot on.
This one's spot on.
That Dude, it's me. It's like they got a photo of me. And then.
But here's the thing. New profile pic.
No way.
Yes.
This is a criminal.
Yes.
This is
hashtag New profile.
Yes. Right?
It's like the
some of your fantasy picks are criminal.
It's like, yes.
It's like the sketch of the leprechaun in that.
Yeah, the amateur sketch.
Yeah, yeah.
Except this actually looks like.
I'm not going to make a drawing of a criminal my profile.
What?
Yes.
Yes, you should.
He's in custody. You're
what
fine.
What are you talking about?
We'll debate.
Everybody.
All right, I'll think about it.
Everybody tweet it.
Everybody
Matt
tweet
and tell
it
him to make it his
new profile pic.
Picture.
But if you have
considered for franchises league, you have to weigh in on this one way or the other.
I like it.
Okay.
All right. Adam Rank, close us out.
I'm going to adapt a young man named Fergus Chan, who is from Hong Kong,
okay,
who traveled to this country to play in a tennis tournament in Long Beach, mm-hmm, and he lost and was like, oh, well, I got a lot of time to kill now. And he went up and started going to Angel Games and has become a huge fan. And then a couple of weeks ago, actually, I think it was last week, the last homestand, Trout piped a home run that he caught. And, you know, he like his expression, like he was so excited, just pure joy. And so the Angels sought him out. Like, who is this guy? Like, he's sitting by himself, and he's just, you know, like, very enthusiastic about the Angels. And he's this young man who's going to be going to college in the fall in Great Britain. And so for the last couple of weeks, he's been traveling, just watching the Angels. He went to Cleveland, saw him there, went to Toronto. And on Sunday, he was throwing batting practice and was fielding, you know.
Wow.
With all that stuff. Yeah.
That's
like
cool.
A real cool story. And everybody is following him on Twitter now. His Twitter handle is super, it's at CERTEKKS. If you're an Angels fan, you should follow him because, you know, he's part of the family now. And so I think that's cool, you know, to see baseball kind of growing with a little bit of an international. And, you know, it is a global game.
Oh, for sure.
It draws fans from around the world. So that's one of the neat things about it. So I've appreciated watching him, although I did tell him, I'm like, bro, you can never go on the field again because that loss on Sunday was absolutely horrific.
He was. It all comes back.
But he was actually, he was actually one of the ones who made me feel better about life. He's like, hey, guys, we had a tough loss, but encourage these guys. We took the series. I'm like, you little son of a gun. Yes, you're right. I will be fine. We'll flush it and move forward and see, okay, if we can't get back into the race. And I know everybody, I think, is dapped Dunkirk at some point.
Yeah,
not me.
Over the last, well, you have your work cut out for you on Thursday.
Good,
so
perfect.
Over the next couple of days, go see. I did see it. I don't particularly like war movies, mm-hmm, but my niece really wanted to see it, and I was like, listen.
Really?
She loves it. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
She wanted to see it really bad. You know what's funny? Like, if you've seen Dunkirk, it's about it's a true story, so I'm not spoiling anything. It's about a bunch of people drowning. My niece almost drowned a couple of weeks ago. I'm like, why did you want to go see this movie? I was just like, how are you recovered enough? And I'm like, I'm sorry that she's like, I knew what the movie was about. I still wanted to go see it and everything. I'm fine. Like, it doesn't matter. But it was really well done. I'm actually surprised. Because I went to Rotten Tomatoes or one of those to see. Like, okay. I can't believe how well reviewed it is. Because it's a great movie.
Yeah.
But Christopher Nolan doesn't hold your hand through it because there's not a lot of emphasis on.
It's not a lot of dialogue.
Dialogue. Yeah.
Not a lot of dialogue.
Oh, really?
You really have to be invested in paying attention to understand what's going on.
Okay.
And if I know anything about movie audiences, that's not what they're about.
No.
They don't like that at all.
It's true.
So I'm surprised. So I guess the critics liked it.
Okay.
Maybe the general audiences don't. But it was really well done. I would never see it again. But it was really well done. I just don't like war movies. I was jumpy the whole time.
Uh-huh.
Like anytime there's fire.
It keeps you at an edge of your seat.
Yeah. I'm like not comfortable. But it was good. I thought that was well done.
All right, there you go. So that's the show. We got the Hall of Fame game.
Wow, that's Daily Daps. Never mind that. How about we actually sign off with the music?
Hall of Fame game on Thursday. You can catch our podcast before the game starts. We'll see you then. For MG, my guy Marcus Grant, for Alex Gelhar, Matt Franciscovich, and the Fantasy Maverick, Adam Rank, I'm James Coe. We're out.